So let's begin as we normally do by taking refuge together and generating a mind of enlightenment. So please just get comfortable in your seats. Yes, just allow your shoulders to relax. And let your body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself, relax into awareness. And imagine the ground beneath you becoming completely pure, as level as the palm of your hand and as smooth as lapis lazuli. And all the space is filled with offerings and rainbow light. And then in the space in front of you, on a lion throne, sitting on cushions of lotus, sun and moon, sits Lama Tsongkhapa. And acknowledge that he is the essence of every one of our kind teachers. And the Lama is surrounded by the assembly of teachers, deities, Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and all enlightened beings. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings. So your mother and father are sitting beside you, your friends and family are behind you, and there are difficult people in front of you, and many strangers surrounding these four groups of people. And you recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive today and have the leisure and opportunity to attain your spiritual goals. And it's very important that you act now upon this realization, because things do not exist as they seem to. And while things are not quite right, you do have a spiritual friend leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. So the practice as pure as possible. Imagine yourself to be a deity, clear, holding a vajra and bell. And that you're making the practice of study and reflection and meditation as purely as possible for the benefit of all sentient beings. And then join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And then think that from the heart of Lama Tsongkhapa and the other enlightened beings surrounding him, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings who surround you. And negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Dharma realizations and your virtues and your lifespan are all increased. So cleansed by wisdom and fortified by love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. And then decide to establish these within yourself and help others to develop them. And to affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So from the heart of each refuge being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. And negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and dharma realizations. And so you relax into awareness, and you invite the field for accumulating merit. And when they appear, you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So to prevent ourselves grasping at and clinging to the practice that we've done, we imagine that our body, our merits and our enjoyments are all utterly transformed and reappear as a pure land, which we offer to Lama Tsongkhapa and the entourage. So we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. And may all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnayatayami. So the offering is being sent off and accepted by the Buddha. He smiles at us with delight. And then we ask the Lama, who is indivisible from the Buddha, Lama Tsongkhapa, to please pour down inspiring blessings. So that all the perverse minds we have are utterly wiped clean. And all the realizations appear to us clearly. And so from the heart of the Lama and all the holy beings surrounding us, lights and nectar stream down, granting blessings and purifying the mind. And we recollect the three principal aspects of the path. And now imagine from the heart of Lama Tsongkhapa, infinite light rays emanate, reaching all beings and environments. And these all dissolve into light and gradually gather into the field of merit, which dissolves into the Lama, who now enters your heart. From your heart, rays of light fill the 10 directions of space, utterly transforming all beings into emanations of Lama Tsongkhapa. You think how wonderful this is that you've been able to accomplish the two purposes. You've brought about enlightenment for yourself and for all beings. Now from the 10 directions of space, the light begins to withdraw, re-enters your heart. And you can feel your body breathing itself. You feel embodied. And you understand that this meditation was one of imagination that has imprinted the mind with the possibility of your own awakening for the benefit of all beings. And then you engage it in the deeds of the Buddha. And you rejoice in that. And then breathing in deeply through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. And let your eyes just flutter open. So we have a number of different questions to answer today. We're only going to be doing like 11 of them, and the rest will follow next fortnight. And you can see what I've done here is sort of divided up into like two sections as we've done before. Okay.
We've missed question one.
Yeah, so this is the first question, thank you, Sue, which is, what's the core issue in the fourth misinterpretation? So I'll go down and just ask you guys what you think. So Sue, what do you think?
I thought it was to do with the erroneous acceptance of inherent existence, coupled with how that then feeds into autonomous arguments. And it's mainly from the misinterpretation from the Prasangikas following Chandrakirti that got it wrong.
Sorry, could you just say it again, please, Sue, would you mind?
I had the core issue was the misinterpretation of the erroneous acceptance of inherent existence at the conventional level.
Excellent, great, that's good. Got it.
Yeah. And that coupled with how that feeds into reasoning and an autonomous syllogisms, it affects that.
Fantastic.
And then that'll do.
That's it. Bruce, do you have anything to add to that? That's a great summary, Sue. That's basically it. That's the core issue.
I've got basically what Sue said. You can accept existence by way of one's own character conventionally, but you must refute the conventional existence of own character that withstands rational analysis.
I've
just got that these scholars misinterpret that they accept that inherent existence they accept inherent existence conventionally, and yet they deny that it's able to bear ultimate analysis conventionally.
So I got the first part right. So say it again, the last part again, please, Dharma, just so I get it.
So I got this from Geshe Zopa's book. Maybe I've interpreted it incorrectly myself. It's possible. So these scholars accept inherent existence conventionally, yes, and yet they deny that it is able to bear ultimate analysis conventionally.
Conventionally.
So I also had they say that you can accept existence by way of one's own character conventionally, yep, but we must refute the conventional existence of own character that withstands rational analysis.
Should it be ultimate at the end, Dharma?
Yes.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, ultimate rational. Sorry, yeah.
The ultimate, yeah, that's right. Linda, how do you go?
So I just had the same as those guys, apart from Sue had it in a different way.
That's
But what does it mean to ultimate analysis conventionally? What does that mean? That's what Dilma said. Ultimate analysis conventionally.
Dilma, would you just say that again? I'm the author of things, so I can hear it again.
So these scholars accept inherent existence conventionally,
Yep, that's
and
cool.
yet they deny that it is able to bear ultimate analysis conventionally. So is that just sort of saying
Oh,
that
okay.
there's no ultimate existence of even conventional existing phenomena that's labeled?
So the first part's straightforward, is correct, isn't it? We understand that. Then it's the last little bit where it says, so this is
Sorry,
a.
I didn't take note of where I got it from, but I did get it from that book. So
I'll come back to this and I'll I'll say something to it at the very end, right? Might help clear it up here, Linda. Caroline, anything you'd like to add to this or?
no, I guess I sort of started with what the two differences were about not having a position of their own and the valid cognition. So I just was reflecting on, a valid cognition that's also, mistaken cognition and what that means in terms of the position, which is what the it goes on to talk about valid cognitions, but they're mistaken. Or is it the other way around? Yeah. I got caught up on, what is a valid cognition versus a mistaken cognition, and sort of went off on a tangent, I think.
I think this is a little bit like what Delma said here. So I'll just read you this and see if we can understand it. So it says here the core issue in the fourth misinterpretation is the claim that the middle way, specifically the middle way consequence, accepts the conventional existence of things by way of their own character, but must refute the conventional existence of own character that withstands rational analysis. In other words, this misinterpretation asserts that while the middle way accepts conventional existence, it denies that this conventional existence can be established through valid cognition that withstands rational analysis concerning the object's own character. Now, I'm just saying that now, and I go, now that does my head in. Oh, that quite, it's not as simple as what Sue said, which is, so I'll come down to the summary. The core issue is a misunderstanding or misinterpretation of the middle way consequent school stance on conventional existence and valid cognition regarding the inherent character of objects, which leads to an incorrect assertion that the middle way accepts an autonomous conventional existence that withstands rational analysis. Now, this the middle way consequence denies, right? So you've got to remember this is like a misunderstanding put forward by the other schools.
That's what's so complex that, you kind of have to be really clear on that it's what it says is a misinterpretation, because you hear it and say, well, that's not what middle K consequence is about. That's does my head in trying to get that straight.
Yeah, no, that's right, Carolyn. It's just, from our side, it's like these guys have got it wrong, but they think they're right. And so they've misinterpreted and put it across like this. But, like I said, this is not the middle way consequence position. It's a misunderstanding or misrepresentation by the other schools. Okay, so then we have this next question. It says, so who holds this view? And what are their characteristics? Sue, who holds this view?
I had these earlier Tibetan scholars who follow Chandrakirti hold the view that misrepresents the Prasangika middle way by accepting inherent existing conventionally and using reasoning akin to autonomous arguments.
Well, I initially thought autonomous, but then the next
part of the question says how they resemble autonomous. So the commentary said those who put forward presentations of valid cognition and the objects it cognizes in terms of their own character that can withstand rational analysis.
Okay, Delma?
So I've got the early Tibetan scholars who followed Chandrakirti, but they didn't strictly follow Chandrakirti's teachings, and they had a tendency to add a little bit of their own explanations that went beyond Chandrakirti's explicit statements.
Can you remember the term that was given to these people?
Yeah, essentialists.
Essentialists, isn't it? So it's like sorry, Linda?
They give them so many names. I had to go back and check in the book.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I was reading now. They call them essentialists, and they call them this and then that, and it's like, write down what it was called. So I don't know, I got lost. At one stage I thought the mind-only school had said it, but I don't know.
That was mentioned. They were like... says the view is often associated with the mind-only school and similar philosophical positions that assert the real existence of phenomena from their own side.
So it was a bit like Bruce. I thought it was middle way autonomous, and then the next question was, okay, so it's not the middle way autonomous.
No. Middle way autonomous are like essentialists.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Why do they have to call them so many different names? Just call them one.
Well, this is like this umbrella term.
Okay.
Like if anything exists from its own side or by way of its own character, anyone who believes in that, the middle way constructs go, well, you guys are all essentialists. There's something essentially there, existing by way of its own character or intrinsically or anything like that.
That's what essentialists mean. There's something essentially there.
That's right.
Okay, that helps.
What's essentially there is inherent existence by way of its own character.
And is that middle way autonomy down?
Down, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Anyone that's not a middle way consequence. Basically an essentialist.
Oh, that's easier.
Yeah.
Thanks,
okay. Yeah, I mean, it's, like we can see, it's not easy to untangle this, is it? So if we can make it bring in some simplicity to a great deal of complexity and go, look, it's only the middle way consequence school that hold this view of non-inherent existence. Every other school does, so they just give it different names. Yeah, and the middle way autonomy would go, oh yeah, ultimately there's no inherent existence, but conventionally there is. So there we have an essential nature in conventional phenomena. It's a quality of conventional phenomena, this essential nature, existing by way of its own character. And if you go sort of down every other school, like the mind only hold the mind to essentially exist. Then the other schools go, oh, phenomena themselves essentially exist, but not the person. It's other things. Is that sort of useful for you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like anybody beneath the middle way consequence, from a middle way consequence point of view, is an essentialist. There's essential nature there.
Eddie, who is Jayander again? Which one was he? What was the Jayanders?
I can't say, Sue, without...
That's okay. That's okay.
I know we got it way back, bad way back when, but I can't grab it right now. Yeah, so essentialists are those who believe in a real, inherent existence of phenomena. They hold that valid cognition is non-mistaken regarding these inherently existent objects. And they assert that objects can be commonly apprehended and established in reasoning and debate. So you got, there's the middle way autonomous, down. Oh, which says here, so next question is like, how do these essentialists resemble the middle-way autonomists?
They're similar in their shared reliance on valid cognition to establish arguments.
Yes.
Their use of autonomous reasonings as a method of proof.
Yes, that's great.
And their focus on establishing of common ground and debates through verifiable cognitive standards, which sounds just like they've just got to agree on it.
Yeah, that's right. So what they're sort of saying is that, so you know, from the middle way autonomous point of view, they hold that phenomena conventionally have their own nature. In other words, they inherently exist. And all the anything beneath that, they agree, mind only, blah, blah, blah. That there's something there, essentially there, independent of consciousness, or consciousness itself from the mind only point of view. But that was a lovely way of putting it, Sue, just breaking it down to those major points. So, Bruce, would you do anything to say?
No, I just had that they accept existence by way of its own
character. Okay. Yeah, that's great. That's fine. Yeah. Delma?
I've just got that they maintain that reasons and pervasions in syllogisms must be established by valid cognition, not merely by mutual acceptance between the parties in debate.
Okay, okay.
Same as Bruce.
Okay, good, good. And Caroline, would you? How did you go with this question? Are you okay?
Yeah, the same one that they, that's, you know, things are there inherently by their own character from their own side, which is the basis of designation for, you know, the subject, and that they say that, therefore, the valid cognition is an unmistaken one.
Okay.
Which is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so both the essentialists and the middle way autonomists maintain that objects have an inherent or own character existence, even though the middle way autonomists deny the inherent existence. Ultimately, they accept it conventionally. In this way, they're sort of, yeah, they're similar. They both agree there's an own nature there or an essential nature. Okay, so no doubt lots interesting here and a lot to untangle. Is there anything anybody else would like to add to this or ask about?
Well, just what you said at the end there. So if they say that the valid cognition of things that exist conventionally by way of their own character is unmistaken.
Yes.
Then what is the valid cognition then when they look at ultimate reality? If they say it's, is it still again unmistaken?
Yeah, well, this is where Lama Tsongkhapa says, look, this position that the middle way autonomists have taken up is really unproblematic.
Yeah, in fact,
it's inadmissible, really.
Because are they saying then that the valid cognition is unmistakable, seeing inherent existence of conventional reality, and unmistaken when seeing ultimate reality? You can't have the same unmistaken cognition, can you?
No.
No. So that's where it really unpeels, isn't it, Will?
There's a little section coming up a little bit further on. This is what I was saying to Sue, and I had a lovely table brought out. I was going to take us through these differences of opinions, especially in terms of what valid cognition, we'll see later on that the schools other than the middle way consequence, like valid cognition is it's valid, right? It's valid. It's unmistaken.
Mistaken, yeah.
The middle way consequence, now it can be valid and
mistaken. Yeah, that's a right. Big thing, isn't
that's
it?
That's a big thing. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a major import.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so let's do our first. Is there anything else anybody would like to add or ask about? Well, I can see why. I've got these slides up here with nothing up on other than the question. It really does my head in because I sort of tried to summarize it up and got it into one answer and everything, and I was like, geez, I don't have it. It makes it hard for me too. Okay, let's do a meditation. So please, just put things aside again, change your posture a bit. So get comfortable and allow your breath to find its natural rhythm and let your awareness open to the present. Knowing that the present is just a verbal designation placed upon consciousness. So let your mind become clear and receptive. And then generate a good motivation. So I think we're trying to understand the nature of reality, and we're doing this not just for our own benefit, but to help all beings do the same. Because we know that it's all of our suffering is arising from a misconception about how we and phenomena exist. So the Middle Way Consequence School teaches that all phenomena exist merely as imputations through name and conception. The phenomena have or lack the quality of inherent nature. So clinging to things as if they had an inherent nature creates suffering through a fundamental misunderstanding of reality. So like echoes that seem to carry sound but have no independent voice of their own, phenomena appear while being empty of self-nature. So if we understood objects to be echo-like appearances, how might our perceptions change? So again, if we could understand objects to be like echo-like appearances, how might perception change? So when we believe an echo is a real voice, we're grasping at the echo as if it were a real voice, and suffering is created. So wouldn't a sense of freedom arise if we could recognize that all beings and experiences exist conventionally, just like an echo? They appear real, but they're empty of any intrinsic reality. So perhaps we could practice observing phenomena to be like echoes throughout the day. Appearing to have their own nature, but not having that. If we could do that, the grip of attachment would loosen. I think that we wish to keep meditating on the nature of reality so that we can actually loosen the grip of attachment, thereby diminishing our own suffering and helping others to do the same. And now breathing in deeply through your nostrils. Exhale. And just let your eyes open and blink. And just make yourselves comfortable again in your chair. Okay, so here's our next question, question four. It's got these two parts. First part is pretty straightforward, and then the second part is, you know, we have to explain why are we saying what we're saying. So the first part is, do middleway autonomists consider valid sense awareness mistaken or unmistaken? So this is the first part. So let's just go through. Bruce, what do you think? Is it mistaken or unmistaken?
I had an unmistaken.
Unmistaken, good. Delma?
Unmistaken.
Mistaken. Yep, good. Sue?
Unmistaken.
Mistaken. Caroline?
Unmistaken. Unmistaken.
Good. And Linda, you probably say the same. Right, okay. So now the difficult part, like why? Why do they think that? So Bruce, would you like to go first?
Because the object exists by its own character.
Yeah, well, it appears to exist by way of its own character.
From an autonomous point of view, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And so it does exist in the way that it appears. That's right. So, Delma, would you like to add anything to this?
No, I've basically written the same thing, but I actually used an example of a sprout
okay,
for my own understanding.
Yeah, okay. Would you like to share your example?
So they hold that a valid sense cognition, such as seeing a sprout,
yeah,
is unmistaken regarding its conventional aspect. They yeah say when you see a sprout, your eye consciousness is not mistaken about the existence of the sprout as a conventional phenomena.
That's
because
right
it apprehends the sprout as existing by its own character and is inherently existent.
Okay, very good. That's nice. Very good. Sue?
Nothing to add, Eddie.
Okie dokie. Caroline?
I just like the word that they accept things conventionally. You know, they accept things and then the consequences don't accept, you know, like, I just like that word. It's just me.
Okay. So remember here when they say...
they accept things conventionally... And they accept things conventionally have their own character.
That's right. That's right. That's the thing. They accept that phenomena conventionally have an own character. So our sense awarenesses are unmistaken about that. Linda, anything to add or you'd like to clarify?
All same. Same.
Okay, good, good.
Eddie, before we go on to the next bit, could I just get a bit of clarification about a couple of terms?
Yep.
Relating to the first one is inference.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure of the usage in this context. And the other one that came up around this was generic image.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, Sue, would you like to share your understanding of what an inference is?
Oh, gee, there is a definition, but I can't remember it.
Okay. That's
but it's more or less based on a reason you can infer something.
No, that's right. That's fine.
Yeah.
So they've got reasons, isn't it, to infer something. Like you might have heard Bruce that one where you see smoke and so you infer fire. Yeah, so my reason for stating like there is fire is because I see smoke. So I can make this inference that where one is, the other is. And what was the last little bit you talked about, Bruce?
Oh, about generic image.
Yeah. So generic images really have to do with conceptions. And of course, an inference is a generic image, isn't it?
Yes, because it's a conceived object.
Yep. So by saying this, Bruce, does this become clearer to you or not so clear?
I'm just not sure how this applies in this context. Like when I was reading about generic image, I was thinking, is it about generalizing from a specific object to the way we label those sorts of objects in general? or whether there's another meaning for it.
So can anybody here, like, give us an example of a generic image? So Bruce, do you have a clear understanding of like what that is?
So,
not in this context, no.
Okay. So Eddie, isn't it when you don't have an object that you can perceive directly, yes, then you've got, so someone says to you, you know, your bed at home, and you are not at home in your bed, or you're not sitting there in your bedroom, yeah, so you have to get a generic image of them, which is a visual imagined idea you have of your bed. You think, yeah, it's your bed, but it's not your bed.
No, that's so it's like obviously said, the conceived object. It's like generic images are like thoughts. Yeah, an example of a generic image is like a thought. Right, so just like you're saying, a good example here is like there is an actual, well, there's a bed, right? There's a dependent rising bed. There's a bed you can actually perceive. Right? There's one bed you can perceive, and there's a bed that you can conceive. So the conception of the bed is the generic image of the bed. You get a generic image of the bed. It's not the actual bed, but it's a generic image of it.
And I think Bruce was right. It doesn't have all the specifics. Like a generic image is almost an estimate of a bed. It's not this that you can't touch it, you can't feel it. You know, it's an estimate or a generalization. It's not rich. It's not rich. Right.
Yeah, so when you, like you said, Bruce, if you were to look, you know, have your eyes open and see a bed, well, that's, it often seems to be like a positive phenomena, right? It's like it's rich in detail. And when you have the conceived object, it's like every bed that exists. Right? It's what they call a universal. You have the universal concept of bed. Right? Because the actual bed, the one that you perceive with your eyes, is very different than the one that you conceive. Right? But they both hold the name bed, don't they?
Yeah, universal's good. That's helpful. Thanks.
Okay. So when it comes to the middle way consequence way of using these ideas of generic images and direct perception, what they're trying to do is to move beyond the idea of the generic image. Because from their perspective, sense awareness, especially, the mental sense awareness can perceive. One of the objects it could perceive is like subtle impermanence, and the other thing it can perceive is emptiness. But before we get to that actual perception, we have the generic image of emptiness. So you and I, and Sue, everybody here, but if you're thinking about emptiness, that's the generic image of emptiness. It's not actually emptiness, but it's, you know, it's a correct generalization. And that's the generic image of the empty. And what we're trying to do is become more and more and more familiar with it until it actually changes and becomes the direct perception of it. That's the sort of process. So there's some argy-bargy about this idea, of course. Because again, this is like a middle way consequence idea, right? That we can actually take these generic images of subtle impermanence and emptiness in particular and actually get at it directly. But we begin with the generic image. We begin with a correct conception. A correct inference. That we can infer that phenomena are empty and we are correct. And now we're trying to see it, see that the phenomena are without inherent nature. Is this okay for you, Bruce, or have I confused you by talking too much?
No, that's helpful. I still have to go back and have another go at that question.
Yeah, that's
right. Understanding, I think. But it's starting to fill in my mind. Thanks.
Okay. So here we have more material about this, Bruce. So let's have a look what the question is. It says, is inference unmistaken for middle way autonomous? And if it is, like, why is it unmistaken? So unmistaken means like here, non-mistaken, right? They just get substituted. So an inference is non-mistaken about its object. And here we really got to focus on like the middle way autonomous perspective. So maybe we could go down the bottom and we'll start with you, Linda, this time. Is inference unmistaken for middle way autonomous?
No, they say that it's mistaken.
Okay. Caroline, is it unmistaken or mistaken? Remember, it's middle way autonomous.
Autonomous, I said it was, they say it's unmistaken.
Okay. Sue?
Unmistaken for middle way autonomous.
Yeah. Delma, unmistaken or mistaken?
Unmistaken.
Okay. And Bruce, do you agree, unmistaken or mistaken?
Yeah, unmistaken.
Okay. And so this is actually, you know, the correct place, yeah. So inference is unmistakable for middle way autonomous. Now, like, why? Why do they say that's the case? Again, this material has sort of been covered, so you're sort of saying it again and again in a way. So,
yeah. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I thought. We were discussing it just before, that they, you know, they accept things conventionally, have their own character or their own nature.
That's right. This is all that's sort of coming back again and really rehashing it, right? And that's the answer, really, right? They're saying, no, it's unmistaken because it actually does have its own character. Yeah, phenomena do exist by way of their own character. And this is a valid cognition. Right? So we're non-mistaken here. It's unmistaken. So then what's the middle way consequence perspective on this, of course? So, okay. So, Bruce, would you like to have a go at this? What's the middle way?
It wouldn't be possible. It would be impossible for a consciousness to be unmistaken with respect to the aspect of its object appearing to exist by way of its own character.
Yeah, nice one. Good one. That's a nice way of saying it. Delma?
Basically the same. They say that we say that nothing exists by way of its own character, but everything arises in dependence of other causes and conditions.
Okie dokie, yep. And Sue?
The consequence argue that all conventional consciousnesses, including sense awarenesses, are mistaken because they perceive objects as if they exist by way of their own character, which does not align with the ultimate truth of emptiness.
Okay. Caroline?
yes, along those lines that everything is... you know, imputations on dependent arisings. And,
this one, yeah, yeah. That's,
you know,
right.
So,
yeah. And Linda?
Same.
Okay. So I've got a sort of nice sort of summary from this, from the point of view of the middle way consequence, right? So the middle way consequence, of course, hold that there aren't any phenomena, there are no phenomena which exist inherently, even conventionally. And then they say valid cognitions engage only imputed, conventionally designated objects, not inherently existing ones, and not existing objects that exist by way of their own character. So autonomous syllogisms relying on inherently existing subjects and reasons are invalid. They're not valid. And mistaken conventional consciousnesses apprehend objects as inherently existing, but this is an error due to ignorance. And then they say, so it's a non-mistaken consciousness is the wisdom realizing emptiness. This is a good one to remember, but this is the only one. Every other conventional consciousness is always mistaken. And as I sort of, oh, here we go, I'll say this. So the middle way consequence perspective holds that things do not exist by way of their own inherent nature, not even conventionally. This means that valid cognitions, when engaging their objects, do so only with respect to objects that are merely imputed through name and conception, not objects that exist through their own character or intrinsic nature. So, for example, when eye consciousness apprehends a color like blue or white, just look at the wall, whatever that color is, you go, okay, my eye consciousness apprehending that color, it does so based on imputation rather than the power or inherent existence of the object itself. So again, if you just look at the walls or look at the colors, you're going to go, yeah, the color appears to exist by way of its own character, doesn't it? It does not appear to us to be imputed by name and consciousness. It looks like the character of the wall is blue. It's over there, independent of consciousness. That's what it looks like. Middle way autonomous would say, yeah, that's right, and it's right. This is what a valid eye consciousness apprehends. It's got to be valid. It's got to be correct. Now, here's the interesting part. Furthermore, the middle way consequences emphasize that there are two types of valid cognitions. Mistaken, conventional consciousnesses that apprehend objects as inherently existing mistakenly, and non-mistaken, the sublime wisdom of noble beings perceiving emptiness. That's the big difference. This is the big difference between middle way consequence and any other school beneath them. They're saying, look, valid cognitions can be mistaken and unmistaken. The other schools, they go, no, they're just unmistaken. That's what it means to be valid. Is this okay for you guys? It's a big deal, this idea that the middle way consequence can say, yes, they're valid, and valid means mistaken and unmistaken. Whereas the other schools go, valid, unmistaken.
Eddie, yeah? When we say that valid cognition for the middle way consequence or school is an incontrovertible knower, that also applies to those mistaken ones, doesn't it? It's incontrovertible, is it?
I don't know, Sue. I don't know where that term comes up. I'd have to.
Okay, no worries.
And look for it. I'm unsure.
So can I just clarify that?
Yeah.
It, all mistaken views, according to middle way consequences, are all the lower schools that say phenomena. Inherent phenomena in person, self of persons,
yep.
Inherently exist.
Yep, that's correct. That's right. That's a nice way to make it quite simple, Delma, but also, you know, we can hold on to that. So this is something I do encourage all of us to do, is to find something that you can just, you know, that's sort of the essence of it. Because, you know, we know that there's major differences, of course, between each tenant system, but in terms of the middle way consequence, you know, this is the real big deal here of how the lower schools are saying that, you know, our sense consciousnesses are valid in relationship to these appearing objects, that they appear, inherently existent, so it's valid, it's unmistaken. Middle way consequence disagree. So the middle way consequence view rejects the middle way autonomous claim that subjects and reasons in syllogisms must be established as commonly appearing. And they refute the conventional existence of inherent nature posited by those autonomists. The middle way consequence argue that positing inherent existence, even conventionally, is unreasonable and inconsistent with the middle way view. So again, we have this interesting bit. So is there anything anybody would like to ask or add to this, or new clarification or anything like that?
So Eddie, so far we've used the terms, you know, so we use valid cognition, then that question four is a valid sense awareness. We've also used consciousness. Yeah. Are they, you know, like is a valid sense awareness the same thing as valid cognition?
Yes. Yep, they're just different names for our, well, here we've got cognition, consciousness, awareness, and they're synonyms.
No.
They all basically mean the same thing. They're just using a different word. Okay, so I'll just quickly run down through some interesting, what we're going to sort of try and take away from here. So the core difference between the autonomous and consequence views on valid cognition are that the autonomous see valid cognitions as unmistaken about inherent existence or unmistaken about existing by way of their own character. Whereas the middle way consequence say that's a mistake. So you can see here we can have a valid, so let's have a look, let's give an example. So if we had an apple in front of us, how would the middle way autonomous cognize that apple? How would they see it? And what would arise in dependence upon them seeing it? What would be their view? How would the apple appear to the middle way autonomous?
It was a real apple there existing from its own side.
From its own side, by way of its own
character. Yeah.
Inherently existence. And from their perspective, is this mistaken or unmistaken?
Unmistaken.
Unmistaken, that's right. That's right. It's a valid cognition. Now from the middle way consequence point of view, what would be valid about the cognition?
That it's got at through an imputed consciousness and conventionally exists, but it doesn't inherently conventionally exist.
Yep, that's right. So it exists in mere name, they'd be saying, wouldn't it? When the middle way consequence see that apple, they know that it appears to have inherent existence, because that's what appears to the middle way consequentialist. So conventionalities appear to exist by way of their own character. But the middle way consequence would say, is that be mistaken or unmistaken in terms of its actual existence?
Mistaken.
Mistaken.
Yeah.
That's right. So these conventional cognizers are valid in appearing to the appearing object, but not in relation to the conceived object. I think that's correct. I'm not sure. Does that make sense to you, Sue? Because the object is appearing to them, isn't it?
I'm not sure, Eddie.
Okay, but the object, the apple, is appearing.
Yes.
Yep. That appearance is valid. What's mistaken about it?
That it doesn't exist.
So what's mistaken about it is that it has no inherent existence. It has no existence by way of its own character. So it's valid in the fact that there's an apple, but it's mistaken in terms of the apple appears to exist by way of its own nature, own character, all that stuff.
So it's saying that the consequence school people know that the apple is empty of any inherent existence,
right,
but they aren't a Buddha yet, so they don't see they don't see conventional existence and ultimate existence at the same time.
That's right.
And so they know that it's mere imputations on dependent arising. And
sure, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So when the middle way consequence have a valid cognition that is like unmistaken, what's appearing to them?
Mere apple.
Yeah, you say that the empty nature of the apple, isn't it? Because remember, the only one that's correct is emptiness.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
In meditative equipoise.
Meditative equipoise, that's right. What they perceive is the emptiness of the apple. But no apple appears, so it's unmistaken. So why do the autonomous insist that objects must exist by their own character conventionally? So why do the autonomous insist an apple must exist by its own character conventionally?
Because they see something that sort of must have its own character to function as an apple, and we agree with the label of apple, and we all agree it functions as an apple, therefore it must, you know, exist as we see it.
Yeah. So one of the things, so all the schools, like the Middle Way Autonomous backwards, right, down to the Vaibhashikas, if the object did not have some existence by way of its own character, or did not have some inherent existence, what would be the consequence of that?
It doesn't exist.
That's right. That's it, Sue. That's it. It would not exist at all. Without its own nature, without an intrinsic existence, it would not exist at all. Yeah, so these conventional cognizers there, they must be correct. Right? They seem to have some intrinsic nature. And if that intrinsic nature were not there, the object would not be there, would not exist. Okay, so let's have this meditation, and we'll have a little tea break, and we'll just do the last few questions. So again, just get comfortable. Let your body be at ease. So while the body is at ease, you are alert. And with each breath, feel your mind becoming more and more present. And whenever scattered thoughts arise, just let them be naturally released. Now create a motivation to understand the true nature of reality for the benefit of all beings. And as you breathe, bring awareness to the objects of your senses. So in other words, bring awareness to any sounds you hear, any sensations you might be feeling, or any thoughts you have. And just notice how they appear to your mind. Now the Middle Way Autonomous, they teach that valid cognitions like perception and inference correctly, non-mistakenly grasp objects as existing by their own character conventionally. And this is how the objects do appear to our senses. The sounds, the sensations and feelings, our emotions and our thoughts. They appear to have their own character conventionally. Just check and see if that's true. Now the consequentialists, however, reveal that all conventional perceptions are mistaken. So the objects of our senses, the sounds, the sensations, the emotions, our thoughts, they're all mistaken. In that they appear to have inherent existence, but in fact lack that inherent existence. They appear to have their own character, but they don't have own character. So all these conventional perceptions are mistaken. Now valid cognition is like a clear mirror. So just as a clean and well-polished mirror reflects objects without distortion autonomists believe that valid cognitions perceive objects as they exist by their own character. So I wonder how our experiences might change if we ceased believing in the inherent existence of objects. So now take a moment to think of something, a possession of your own that you cherish, that you hold dearly. Bring that to mind. And ask yourself, can you recognize both its conventional appearance and its ultimate lack of intrinsic existence? So I wonder, what freedom might arise from us understanding that our perceptions, while functionally reliable, are mistaken about the own character of their objects? That our perceptions, while functionally reliable, are mistaken about the inherent existence that they seem to have. And whenever you can, try to observe phenomena through the lens of this wisdom. So we're neither rejecting appearances nor grasping at own character. Try to rest in the spaciousness of knowing that all appearances arise dependently. That appearances arise without own character, arising dependently. Now just breathing in deeply through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth. We'll take a slight break now, so if you'd like to get yourself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, okay, everybody, welcome back. Let's have a look at our next question. So we're on question 7, which asks, how does the difference between these views relate to their distinct objects of negation? Okay, so let's start off with the middle way autonomy. So what is the object of negation in the middle way autonomous position? What are they negating? Anybody? Sue, would you like to go first?
The autonomous negate only ultimate inherent existence.
Excellent.
Because they accept conventional inherent existence.
That's right. This is great. So this is a simple one to remember, everybody. The object of negation, the middle way consequence, the middle way autonomous position is ultimate inherent existence. Inherent existence ultimately. So you might remember a few months ago there's a lot of talk about, you know, we went over this material. So they refute their object of negation is own character ultimately, or inherent existence ultimately. What's the object of negation for the middle way consequence, Bruce?
the consciousness skills say that there's nothing that exists by its own character.
Great, that's right. So they negate own character ultimately and conventionally. They are middleway consciousness. There are no phenomena that exist by way of their own character. There are no phenomena that have any intrinsic nature. So there's we have our two objects of negation. Middleway autonomous is ultimate existence, or phenomena existing ultimately by way of their own character. They negate that. So in other words, the middleway autonomous are leaving existence by way of its own character, or existence intrinsically or inherently, on the conventional level. This should be clear to everybody, isn't it? This is okay? Okay, now the next thing is, we leave that. That's the answer. Right? Now we come to the next question. According to Bhava Viveka, he's the founder of the Spinaway Autonomous School, he says, what issue arises when a syllogism's subject is specifically qualified? And then they give the example. For example, sound is the quality of space instead of just sound. What's going to be the problem? Delma, would you like to have a shot at this?
I'll have a shot. When debating parties hold individual philosophical positions, the subject of the debate cannot be established by either party because they don't agree on it.
Excellent. That's it. Nice. Is this clear for everybody? Did everybody else come up with the same idea here? There's just no agreement. We can't, it just fails to be established. So just as Delma said, this is the answer, basically. Is this clear to everybody? Is it unclear? Great, so we're all good there. Question 9. What must both parties in a debate establish as commonly appearing before proving the probandum? And why is this the case? Bruce, any idea?
First they got to agree on subject.
Yes.
The predicate. And establish an agreed example. Otherwise, they're comparing apples and pears.
Yeah, well, that's a nice way of saying it. That's right, the comparison between apples and pears otherwise. Linda, what do you say?
I said they had to have a subject that was common to both parties. Otherwise, you haven't got any grounds on which to build a debate.
Yeah, that's right. Great. That's again, this is good, clear answers. Is anybody unsure or have difficulty with this? Yeah, so the subject must be something that both parties accept as appearing in common. And like Bruce gave the good example there, we can't agree that apples and pears are the same phenomena, right? So that's the problem that's going to happen. So what does apprehended in common mean? Caroline, you're still there? Would you like to have a go at this one?
It means sort of what we've just been saying for the previous question. I thought the answer was the same, that they have to agree on the object that is appearing. Both parties have to agree on the object that's appearing. Otherwise, as Bruce said, it's apples and pears.
Yeah. No, that's again, it's once again, this is just, I think the question is trying to get us to be clear about this.
But does it also mean just on... In the notes that on page 32 of the notes, it had, a subject and then the reason because it exists. So do the autonomous people believe independent arising? Because if, one of the reasons why they're not in common because the autonomous say, well, things just exist from their own side and stuff. So they mustn't then agree that anything is dependently arisen, which...
Not quite, Caroline, but you're sort of halfway there. They do agree that things dependently arise. So what do you think, where's the agreement here on dependent origination?
Well... Well, do they think that everything, you know, like if you take a sprout then, or you take a seed and it grows into a tree, do they say that the seed and the water and the tree are all existing from their own side?
Yeah, that's right.
But they don't kind of see that, well, the tree only comes from, you know, conditions and functions as a tree, and it's labeled that we agree that's a tree and not an apple.
No. So they go halfway, Caroline. They would agree that the tree exists dependent upon the seed, and they would agree that, like a tree, is a dependently arising phenomena, but dependent upon causes and conditions, not in mere name, not by just conception. And that these causes and conditions exist by way of their own character.
Right, so that's tricky.
Yeah, it's like, what can I say? It's like a partial agreement, which they do, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Like, they agree,
yeah.
Ultimately, but, you know, when it comes back to the conventional, it's like on causes and conditions.
So is it they don't then go like dependent arising is based causes and conditions and parts, and then the one about labeling, they don't get that bit.
No. They're just causes and conditions.
Conditions.
It's causes and conditions.
Oh, I just
established from their own side.
Oh, I didn't realise they even, yeah, okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it is. You're right. It's good to know. Yeah, so what does apprehend in common mean? So everybody's correct. It just means a subject recognised by both sides through the same kind of valid cognition. But as we know, in the context of debates between consequentialists and essentialists, meaning the autonomous as well, such a commonly apprehended subject does not exist, because their valid cognitions apprehend fundamentally different objects. And again, it's the same sort of question again as the last one. Can a middle-way autonomist and a middle-way consequentialist in a debate have a subject that is apprehended in common? And why or why not? Well, we're all going to say, no, they cannot have this sort of subject. Right? They do not have a subject that is apprehended in common. But then the next thing is like why? So, Delma, would you like to have a go at this again? Why is it they can't?
I only got that no, they can't.
Yeah.
And I tried to answer this question, but I actually just couldn't get through.
Sure.
I just couldn't come to a conclusion.
That's good. You get the first part. This is the most difficult part, is the why bit. Linda, would you like to have a go at answering the why?
I'll give it a go. So, obviously no, because the valid cognition that the middleway consequence say that the valid cognition is unmistaken, whereas middleway consequence say that the valid cognition is mistaken for any sort of conventional object. So therefore, they can't have a common ground or a...
Yeah, you're right on track.
Object.
Yeah. Basically, these two systems hold fundamentally different views about valid cognition, and the objects are apprehended. So remember, so this is this interesting part where the middleway consequence can have valid cognitions that are mistaken and unmistaken. And the middleway autonomists have valid cognitions that are unmistaken. So the middleway autonomists are saying we have valid cognitions which are unmistaken about the nature of conventional objects. The middleway consequence goes valid cognitions about conventional truth objects are mistaken. Only time this valid conditions are unmistaken is when they're focused on emptiness. There's a, you know, big difference here, isn't it? Middleway concept going, valid could be mistaken and unmistaken. Middleway autonomists are saying valid cognitions are always unmistaken. Yeah, so they can't have a subject that's appearing commonly to both of them. Yeah, so for the autonomous, their valid cognitions, they apprehend objects as existing by way of their own character, while the consequentialist sees these cognitions to be mistaken and hold that only conventional, imputed objects are cognized, which do not exist by way of their own character. So Chandrakirti's clear words explains that since inaccurate or mistaken and accurate, non-mistaken consciousnesses are different and engage different objects, there is no commonly appearing subject for both. The autonomous insists on a commonly appearing subject based on valid non-mistaken perception of own character. But the consequentialist denies such cognitions and objects exist, even conventionally. Hence, no subject can be established as commonly appearing. Again, anything that you'd like to raise or... Oh, so here's an interesting question. What's the difference between ultimate and conventional valid cognition? What does ultimate valid cognition realize? Or cognize or know.
According to whom, Eddie? According to whom?
Middleway consequentialists.
Ultimate cognition, according to the middle way, consequence girl realizes the lack of inherent existence.
Excellent, that's right. Yeah. Realizes emptiness. Sorry, that's its object.
But wouldn't you have to say, Eddie, that because emptiness isn't just emptiness, it's emptiness of all phenomena, so wouldn't it have to realize the emptiness of all phenomena to be?
Well, it does, but it can realize that by taking one phenomena.
Yeah.
Once it realizes any single phenomena, you know it's across the board.
Yeah. So wouldn't you need to say then that realizes emptiness of one or all phenomena? Otherwise, it sounds that emptiness is just reified of, you know, it just exists out there.
You might say that for, you wouldn't have to say it for the consequentialists.
But if you argue, but you would for the, yeah. But isn't that what the Heart Sutra is all about, being very specific, that it's all these specific phenomena, it's not the emptiness?
Well, they could go to the emptiness of emptiness. You know, they don't all the conventionalities. But again, you know, so the tricky bit here, as you're pointing out, Caroline, is to go, an emptiness does not ultimately exist.
Well, how does it exist?
Conventionally. It's just a convention. All phenomena exist conventionally.
Even emptiness, right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if you look for an ultimate emptiness, you won't find one. Because there isn't anything that ultimately exists.
Now you're doing my head in.
Okay, but I think this will be our last meditation and then we'll dedicate. So again, just get comfortable. Just allow your body to become still and let your breath flow naturally. And again, just set a motivation to benefit all sentient beings. So while you're sitting, you are breathing. Try to bring your attention to the breath, and if you can, try to either hear it or feel it. And then notice how that heard breath or felt breath appears to your mind. the felt breath or heard breath will appear to your mind to have its own character, to exist by its own nature, to have an own nature. Just see if this is true. Now, it is true that conventional phenomena will appear to us to have an own nature, an existence by way of its own character. But it lacks own character. It doesn't have that character. It does not have that nature, not even conventionally. So if a middleway concept, from the middleway consequence point of view, that there is nothing, nothing whatsoever, even the breath itself does not have own character, even conventionally. Yet the autonomous maintains that things exist conventionally by their own character. This is a fundamental difference which makes it impossible for these two philosophical positions to establish a common subject in debate. So just imagine that there's two, that you're watching two people play chess. Two people, of course, are sitting at the same table, they're playing chess. One of them, the consequentialist, he's got the idea that these pieces exist only because of the rules of the game. And there are no intrinsic chess piece which is independent of play. And the other, the autonomous, believes that while the chess pieces depend on the game, their individual forms exist conventionally with their own identity. Isn't this the way that these pieces appear to us, similar? Does it appear to you that your mind grasps objects to have their own nature? Own nature, the sabawa. To grasp at an object as if it had its own nature creates suffering. What would happen if we were to loosen the grasping? A sense of freedom and spaciousness would emerge. So how might our interactions with others change if we recognize that their views arise from different valid cognitions? Surely, compassion and patience would arise towards others. So, if you can, try to release the view that grasps at own nature, own character, inherent existence. And through this release, may we be able to help all beings become free from confusion. And just exhale through your mouth and let your eyes open and bring your awareness back to your place. So this brings us to the end of our, and today we looked at 11 answers. We've got more next week. So next week we'll be doing the second part of these questions here. So it's the same commentary, of course. It's just, anyway, whatever's up here. We're basically, you know, you guys might have gone through already and answered all these questions. If you have, you're ahead of the game. So I was just thinking, you know,
but I don't have any more questions than the one we've done today. Are there more questions that were sent out, anybody?
For 19B, is anybody else getting them? I don't think so, is there? No,
they're not up there yet.
Okay. All right.
I'll send you guys out there. In the meditation, there was a part that said, how might our interactions with others change if we recognize that their views arise from different valid conditions? So I just think about this thing. Oh, I remember having, you guys might have too. You know, sometimes you have a talk with somebody or a discussion with somebody. You're both talking about the same phenomena and you're both correct about it, but at the same time, you're missing each other. You know, like, so if you have a phenomenon's got all sorts of different characteristics, doesn't it? Yeah, and then your discussion, or what often turns out to be arguments, is that you're talking about one aspect of the phenomena, which is valid, and the other person is talking about another aspect of the phenomena, which is valid. But you miss each other. Although they're valid, they're sliding past one another. So this might be a helpful way to sort of look at, like, in everyday life we have, we misperceive what the other person is talking about. They misunderstand us, we misunderstand them. Of course, in this discussion that we've been going through, the argument is put forward that, well, you guys are all seeing intrinsic nature or own character, and we don't. So actually, we can't actually meet here. And from our perspective, we have some sort of general idea of this, we have to understand, like, you know, you've got all these systems beneath the middle way consequence system that disagree with the middle way consequence. We've got all these people in the world that are apprehending true existence, existence from its own side, existence by way of its own character, natural existence, intrinsic existence, and there ain't any there. There's none there.
But Eddie,
yeah?
Unless you're in meditative equipoise, the whole thing, meditative equipoise is single pointedly on emptiness, mm-hmm. then when we're discussing with someone else, we are still seeing things as though they're inherently existence, and so we're sort of, but we know, well, we don't remember most of the time. I don't anyway. Yeah. Most of the time, remember they lack inherent existence.
What we forget, we forget that the thing that we often forget is, for us, they're existing like illusions. Conventionality, and conventionalities will always appear to us to have intrinsic nature, just like it does to everyone else too.
Yeah.
But we have the saving grace of going, remember, like an illusion, like an echo, like a reflection.
Yes. That's the issue, isn't it? I don't remember a lot of that most of the time.
And so this is the, I think Lama Tsongkhapa's is in, three principal aspects of the path, where the conventionalities can help us to remember emptiness, because we go like an illusion. Right? Like this is why I said, like, come at emptiness through dependent arising. So for other people, they get dependent arising, but they grasp at the intrinsic nature. Just like middle way, like every school beneath the middle way consonants, and people who don't even have a tendon system, that's what they're doing, isn't it?
And I guess the thing, you know, for me is to try and remember that why it's important is that this, you know, it's the suffering that unless, you know, you never cut the root of samsara without the realization of emptiness, therefore, you know, from the beginning strive to understand dependent origination.
Yes, and this could lead us, like I said, more, reasonably, but it should have really inspired like the sense of greater patience. You know, as you kind of think, you know, Jesus, but very, very few people know about this, let alone are actually able to practice it. So we know, but we find it difficult to practice. You know, we find it difficult to remember, and we often forget. And so we do become impatient with others. You know, we lose our compassion for them because they're basically, their bad behaviours appear to like exist from their own side. They're nothing to do with us. Right? Anyway, just something to think about, and I just thought about it, just seeing that sentence, thought, once we forget, lots of problems arise. So let's dedicate, folks. We'll call it a day, and then I'll send out these questions within the next couple of days. So this is, you know, all this material has come out through the kindness of Kintsa Rinpoche, Geshe Tashi Tsering, and of course the wonderful commentaries that have been put together by His Holiness Lama Zopa Rinpoche, many of the other teachers, Geshe Sopa. So let's recollect how kind they've been to us and understand that this is really helping us. It's and give back the help, give back the merit. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And for His Holiness, who's just turned 90 years old, wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And for the quick finding of the Lama Zopa Rinpoche's the new rebirth, in holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armour of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, I make this request.